Welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
To me, being perfect is not about that scoreboard out there.
This is a chance of a lifetime.
When you can understand the person, you can then work towards a common goal.
We are all on the same team.
Know your role and do it to the best of your ability.
Focus on the fundamentals. We've gone over time and time again.
Your defense has got to be better.
Leave no doubt tonight.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
Hello and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we believe that there is no algorithm for leadership, and so we interview great sports coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us be better leaders. Sjoerd is a Dutch former field hockey player and now coach. As a player, he twice won the Dutch National Championship and Euro Hockey Club Champions Cup. He then transitioned into coaching, first with youth teams, eventually leading the Netherlands under-21 team to the gold medal at the World Cup and the under-21 men to a bronze at the World Cup. In 2015, he was appointed head coach for the Dutch women. Then in 2017, led the Indian men to gold at the Asia Cup, before leading the Indian women's team to their momentous fourth at the Tokyo Olympics. In 2021, he was voted best coach in the world of a women's team by the International Hockey Association. Sjoerd has a well-rounded philosophy that he has thought deeply about, and some of the key highlights from our discussion were how he works with the circles of attention to help his athletes focus and take responsibility, the way he created a vision for the Indian women's team and then broke it down into daily goals that supported the behaviours they needed to realise their Olympic dream, and how he focused on helping his team improve their decision-making by asking questions instead of telling them what to do. This was a great conversation, and I hope you enjoyed as much as we did. And just before we go to the interview, if you would like to know more about what we do here at the Great Coaches Podcast, then head over to our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com, where you will find lots of exclusive audio and video content for you to enjoy. There is also an insights database of 1 to 2 minute videos from the great coaches we have interviewed talking about key leadership topics like conflict, culture, and strategy. You can search through it, download, and share to bring a different context to the teams that you lead. And now, please enjoy our interview with Sjoerd Marinier.
You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Sjoerd Marinier, good morning your time, good afternoon my time, and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I'm very excited to talk a little bit of field hockey with you. We have a lot of people who play that sport in this country where I am today, Australia, and I'm sure they'll be very interested to hear all about the journey that you've been on. But Sjoerd, something really simple to kick us off. Can you just tell us where you are in the world and what you've been doing so far today?
At the moment, I'm in the Netherlands. And like after India, I arrived back in the Netherlands and now already a year and a half. And mainly what I'm doing now is being an entrepreneur. So I'm a co-owner of a few companies, a few startups. And yeah, the lessons I've learned in the sport, I now use them in corporate life, like business talks. But also I have a company where we use the profiling, what I have done with Indian women to get to know yourself better, but also your teammates. And I'm also implementing that in corporate life. I have a company who has hockey schools, hockey camps, and one in Netherlands and one other company. It's with sports events, tournaments we organize, and so all kind of things. So still sports, but on another way as direct coaching a team.
Ah, very interesting. I look forward to getting into all of that with you, and especially what happened in India and the great story that unfolded there. But can we start perhaps by just reflecting on the fact that you've been coaching for at least 20 years that I can see? You've been to world championships and all kinds of events. You've been to the Olympics, of course, and I'm sure you've seen some great coaches up close and perhaps some coaches that aren't so great. But I wanted to ask you, when you think about the great coaches that you've seen, the ones that you've been up close next to, what do you think they do differently that sets them apart?
Yeah, I think the first thing all the good coaches, the great coaches, and I'm watching a lot of two other coaches, is a really strong vision for the long term. And they really stick to their plan no matter what. So that's where it for me always starts. And the second thing is they are authentic. They are who they are. They don't want to be someone else. They don't want to pretend they're someone else. They are really authentic. And the third thing is they make players and staff better. So not only the players, but also the people around them. And they reach their potential. And they do that by building personal relationships. And I think those three things, and there's, of course, much more things, but those three are always important for me. And I think a strong leader always has a vision, and not a short vision, but where do you want to go? So I knew when I went to India and I went to the Olympics, I arrived in 2017, I knew exactly how I wanted to see the team 3-4 years later. And I think that is something what really helps you as a coach, but also helps the team, that you know, okay, how are we going to reach our goals?
Sherrod, you were also a player long before you became a coach. In fact, you won the Dutch championships twice as a player. Was coaching something that you were thinking about back then?
Yeah, I was coaching since I was 16 already, and I always enjoyed it, and that was with youth. That's where you have to learn it, in my opinion. And I started to think about, okay, what do I want to do in the future? And the moment I realized I'm not good enough as a player to reach the Olympics, I want to do it as a coach. And from there on, I really was very ambitious to reach that Olympics, because, yeah, as a player, it was like you still believe as a young player, oh, I can make it. But that moment, there's a moment you realize, I'm not good enough. Yes, I have two championships titles, but it was also because I had really good players around me. And I knew very well, okay, what is my task? And I was very task-driven. But to reach that Olympic level, yeah, it was not, I was just not capable of that. And that was the moment like, okay, I now want to do everything to reach that Olympics, because that was a big dream of me. How can I reach that? But then as a coach. And from there on, the big dream, I thought, okay, how do I want to reach that moment? How do I want to reach? Because that's very, very far away. And from there on, again, you work in small steps. But sometimes I knew in that process, I was pushing myself so much because I really wanted to achieve that. And then as coach, then I also started to become frustrated because I don't have a lot of patience and it didn't go fast enough. And that's what I felt like, okay, you need to do a step back. And from that moment, things turned around.
When you took that step back, was that around the time that you were coaching the Dutch women in 2014? Because I've read that it was then that you realized that there was some stuff you needed to change if you were going to chase that vision.
Yeah, there was a very difficult moment in my career. It was 2014, 2015, and I got fired from the Dutch by the Dutch Federation. And on that moment, for me, it was really important. Okay, I can do two things. One, I can blame all the others, and that it was not fair that I got fired, and I can come up with all kinds of reasons. Or the second thing, I start watching myself. And I did the second thing, and I watched myself. Okay, what can I do different? Because I don't want to be in that situation anymore. So what do I need to change? So watching myself in the mirror, okay, shoot. So I went to China for 2 months and I already made a big mind change. And one of the things was, if I have a plan, yeah, I stick to that plan and nobody interferes. I don't allow it anymore. And that's what I did with the Dutch Federation. And that's fine, yeah, but I had to blame myself that I allowed this. And that's why I thought, and that really helped me to make the next step in my coaching career. Sometimes you need to do one step back to make two further. And it's not nice to get fired, but I didn't want that it was without reason. It had to help me for making new steps.
Well, those new steps took you to India, which of course is the central part of this amazing journey you've been on. And the Indian women's team in 2016, they went to the Olympics. They hadn't qualified for 36 years, so that was a great achievement, but they didn't win a game. You took over in 2017. You take them to Tokyo 2021 and they play off for bronze and they actually narrowly miss out and the bronze medal, which was a great achievement. But if you go back and you think about it, what were the first things you did when you took over that really drove and fueled that improved performance?
Yeah, first I made up the initial situation and looked to the qualities which are available. And from there, we start to set an objective together and indicated the consequences of the objective. And that is a really important thing. It's the difference between saying and doing. And if that difference is really small, you have a big chance of success. And this journey goes up and down with bumps. And sometimes you think like, oh, will we ever make it? Yeah, but then you always search the positive things. And what really helped us is like, okay, with the vision, we know how we want to be at the Olympics. And from there, we work backwards. Okay, what is necessary? So we need to have the fitness has to be improved. And that is what we set, what I said almost every day against the girls. Listen, if you want to achieve that goal, the consequence is the fitness has to be better, or you have to eat a healthy food. All these kind of things. And that's how it works for me in sports. I constantly confront my players with what are the consequences, what kind of behavior do we want to see? And I think that is what I've done the last 4.5 years when I arrived in India, or when I arrived in India, constantly what kind of behavior suits our goals. And then you make really, and from there on, the big goal, the Olympics, we made small goals. And the small goals, I really make them like, okay, that I knew we can reach them. And it's not about results, but about behavior. And because we make those small goals, they get more confident. And every time with small steps, the confidence grows and grows and grows. So slowly the girls also started to feel like, hey, we really can believe something. Because like I can tell them over and over and over as a coach, but at the end, they have to feel it. And I think the World Cup 2018 in England was a good example. I had a psychologist with a team and she said, Sjoerd, you have to tell the girls we really can win a medal. So listen, I'm from the Netherlands and the Netherlands, we are really down to earth. Yeah, you don't say these big things. Yeah, if you don't really believe you can make it. And says, Sjoerd, keep saying that. So I told the girls, listen, we're going to become world champion. We're going to go for a medal and say, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And they follow me. And what happened, we played a quarterfinal against Ireland. Now we lost in shootouts, but if we won that match, we would have played Spain. And the thing is, it was new for them in that situation because they never played that quarterfinal, but they were also thinking like, a few weeks ago, we have practice matches against Spain and we won them. So if we win this quarterfinal, we can also win the semifinal because that was our next opponent. And then they were very close. So they start feeling, but then they start to dream too big. And they were not there with the mind with the match Ireland. And then we lost them eventually. But what the good thing, what happened there is they start really believe, yes, we really can achieve something. But that was a process of years. And that's what I want to, what I mean to say is small steps that the confidence starts building up. And then, yeah, the big step at the end at the Olympics. So, yeah, I must say this was a very delicate process and very fascinating and interesting. But the good thing with the girls is if they really believe you and they follow you, and it doesn't matter if I say the wall behind me is white and I told them, listen, it's black. They say, yes, sir. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not good because at the end, but we will speak later maybe about this. It's also about making their own decisions.
Ah, that was my next question, actually, decisions, because I have this interesting quote from you. I'd like to read it to you before I ask the question. You say, when you involve players in the thinking process, they will get more tactical awareness and learn faster. This is scientifically proven because they have to learn to take decisions inside the pitch. Now, Sjoerd, if someone was listening and they wanted their team to be able to make better decisions, what would you tell them to do first?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is start asking questions to your players and let them think instead of telling them what to do. I think that is the main thing. And that's how we, for instance, in Netherlands, raise our children on the sports fields, And I think that is I think that's important, because then the thinking process starts, and it's not only with the coach who's handing over all the information. And this is not easy when you don't speak the same language. So in the beginning, I had to talk more than they did. But eventually, when their English became better, I implemented this and also allowed them to do their own meetings. Yeah, and you have to be patient for this. Have patience for this, because sometimes it takes longer. And my girls were really shy in the beginning, and also really shy about talking English. Yeah, because before me, sometimes when someone spoke English, they were laughing, and these kind of things. I have to make a really safe environment, and no laughing will be done if someone speaks English, even if it's very poor. And I think that is important in a team.
Well, the team obviously gelled quickly because you had some early success, as you talked about. You know, the Indian team take the silver medal at the Women's Asian Champions Trophy, and the Asian Games in Jakarta, they also get the silver. But what's really interesting is you get to Tokyo and the team loses its first three group matches. So was there something in the way that you responded to those losses that helped the team rally and get into the knockout stages?
Yeah, of course, we did our planning before the Olympics. So we knew exactly the first three highest ranked countries, we would have them the first three matches. And then we would have Ireland and South Africa. And if we were a little bit lucky, then winning match four and five could bring us in the quarters. So what I was busy was constantly the performance. I was not talking about the results. Every match we have to grow. You have to realize we hardly played matches in the COVID time. We couldn't travel, and luckily Hockey India did that really well. We had a tour to Argentina and one to Germany in those difficult times. So I was really happy. But between that time and the Olympics, I was, I think, 4 or 5 months, we didn't play a match. So I used those three first matches to grow and to gain confidence. But the last match against GB was not good at all. And they were doing strange things. And it felt for me like, okay, this is a team I started 4.5 years ago. And I became very, very angry at them. I said, listen, you don't realize at this moment, it's not just being here at the Olympics, but it's also getting result. And you're now at the moment, you can get that result, but you have to act different. So I said, make up a team plan against Ireland. And I walked away from that meeting. And of course, they were like, please, coach, come back. And then I had my assistant, Janneke Schopman. She was in between that process, between the players and between me. And she was like, shoot, what are we doing? I said, I just leave them. And I don't care. But more or less, I was creating a situation. They have to stand up and they have to take responsibility. And from there on, then, of course, I came back to them. Said, listen, what is the plan? And how we're going to play against Ireland? And they came up a plan, the same as I did, because we knew each other. They know what I want to, how I want to play against Ireland. I say really well. And then I showed them a clip from a movie, and in that clip shows being in the momentum. So where are you? You are here. You are at the Olympics, and you're busy with your task. So from there on, they were more busy with focusing on their task than being busy with the outcome. And that's why we played a really good match against Ireland. The complete mindset was different. Yeah. Just because the whole result part was gone from their heads. And afterwards, I felt like, okay, they are busy against GB with, okay, if we can win this match and Ireland, we make sure we're going to make the quarterfinals. But on that way, you're thinking about what I already said, mentioned a few times, the outcome, but also about results. And thinking about results will create absolutely pressure in your mind. And that's what you want to avoid, especially at the Olympics. So they were more like, okay, what I created that moment was, okay, we are back with our feet on earth. My task is against Ireland, this, and this. That's what I need to do. And then at the end, we will see the outcome. And that's the same what we did against South Africa and against Australia. So that was a big turnaround moment for us.
Well, it sounds like being in the moment and empowerment are the two big pillars which you built the Indian foundation. Yeah. Where did your focus on these two elements come from? What was the change that triggered this awareness of the importance of those two areas?
Yeah, it's the thing is, I work with the circle of with the circle of attention. So it means you have five circles or six circles, and circle one says me and my task. Circle two is I'm busy with my environment, with the referee, with the weather. Circle three is a comparison with results. So if I miss this stroke, we will not win. If I make this stroke, I'm the hero of the country. But if you think about these things, you think not about your task. So if you do a drag flick, you have to think about, okay, I have to go with my left foot to the ball. I have to go low with my left hand, because then the outcome will be good. Focusing on these things, that will make the difference. And that's why, for instance, Nadal, Federer, they're not just good tennis players. Their mindset is always about what is my task. So many times, I don't think that Nadal will ever blame the opponent when he lost the match. If you watch all his interviews back, it's always about himself. And that's what he can control. And that's what I kept telling the girls. What can you control? That you're involved in the game. Yeah, taking responsibility. That's where you make energy for the team. So at one striker, she was always busy with, okay, I need to score, I need to score. I said, no. You need to be the energy maker of the team. And when you give energy and you are on the right positions, goals will come up. And eventually, she scores the most goals at the Olympics for India. So that's the way a little bit works.
I mean, this Indian result was so powerful to a nation that is so desperate for more Olympic medals. You know, I haven't got at my fingertips how many they've won in history, but it's quite a surprisingly low number. What do you hope is the impact going forward of the team's performance from this Olympics?
Now, the confidence. Now, what I hope is that we inspired so many young kids, girls, boys, doesn't matter, about what you can achieve, and that it's good to do dream, and dreams can come out. I think that is one of the main things. And besides this, our big goal for the Olympics was to create a better position for the woman. I don't know if that's happened. I see a lot of from the girls, they have much more followers on social media, so their reach is much more bigger. And I think those things are very good, and that's what we want to achieve. And that's also the legacy from the team from this Olympics. You can achieve everything you want, but you have to work for it. And you have to be in hockey, you have to be a team. And I think that is something what for us was the most important thing. And the medal was a way to achieve that. But at the end, you see, and my wife was the one that we inspired 1.4 billion people, but we didn't win a medal. And I think we created something bigger. And this is a nice story about girls who achieve something and not winning, but actually won something much bigger. And that's the hearts of the Indians. And my wife said that we lost that match against Argentina. She says, "Shoot, I know your disappointment. You want something bigger." And that's their hearts. And I think that something bigger isn't there.
You talk about, you said at the start of the interview that you're working with corporate environments now, and you're doing some training and some keynote speaking. And I'm wondering how this message of empowerment resonates with your audience, because what, you know, you did is quite brave. I'm not sure whether there'd be many people listening that would think, wow, to walk away from the team and give them the responsibility to come up with the response is quite a brave thing to do. But when you talk to corporate environments about empowerment, how do you frame that message to them?
Yeah, like a CEO really has to give, has to be clear in his vision. And from there on, you have your culture guards. Your culture guards are, for me, for instance, my captains with the leadership group. It's one group. So I make around three groups in my teams every time. And you have to be able to grow to the next group. But as a leader, I need to, as a CEO, I need to spread my vision. My management team must take over and spread that vision to the rest of the company. And then it's very important. They are the culture guards. So an example from the team, Xiaomi, one of the young players, played a tournament with under 21s in my time. And she explained to the girls from the under 21s how it is, what you need to do to come in the national team. And she also said some of the girls came too late to the meeting, says, this is not allowed. So what happened? She became my culture guard instead of I'm doing it. So in the beginning, I was the culture guard. I really want to create that high performance culture. What is allowed? What is not allowed? So I'm the police officer. And eventually you want that inside your team, inside your company, you created culture guards who take over from you, who take responsibility to take decisions. And that process evolves every time. You have every time new culture guards. Yeah, people need to grow to the next step. And sometimes you have people in your team, yeah, in your company, they are good at what they are doing. Yeah, like me, I was a player and I have to give the ball to Jeroen Domey. And now I can say I became twice champion of Netherlands. I defend really well, but I knew this is my task. I was really task driven. You need also people in your team, in your corporate in that. But you also need people who wants to grow to the next group. And if they don't, yeah, you have to sometimes tell them, okay, I go for the next one. And as a CEO, you constantly are raising the bar. Yeah. What is the benchmark? And that is what I did with the girls. So every time, for instance, Rani is a defender of a striker, and she was not that good in the beginning of when I came as a defender, as a striker needs to defend also. It's the first line. And she's not used to go low with her left hand. And I told her, listen, I want you to go a little bit lower with your left hand. So it was like this. And I showed her the clip and I said, hey, really good, Rani. And she said, yeah, thank you. I'm very proud of it. It's going much better. I said, absolutely. So she had a lot of confidence. And then I ended this. I'm sure you also can go a little bit more lower. So it was positive. But on the other thing, I already gave her a new task. So every time I was putting that bar higher and higher. But if I would say, no, Rani, it is not good enough. Your left hand has to be completely on the ground. I would lost the relationship with Rani. And I take her too far outside the comfort zone. And that is the task from a leader and from the CEO. How far do you take someone outside their comfort zone? And that is the process I've been doing 4.5 years, individual and as team. And I personally believe in the individual way that really helps building a team. If every individual becomes better, the team becomes better. That's also how I believe it in corporates. That's what one of the things what I did with the team is profiling all the players. And as mentioned, that's what a company now I've created is also like, on what way can I get the best out of people? But I need to know them, but they also need to know themselves. So we did profiling, and then we found out Navneet is a strategic person. She was the only one in the team. So that means she understands the tactics. Yeah. And I involved her in the whole tactical plan. And then she was spreading the word in amongst the team because I knew that was their quality. And because she liked it, because she knew she was good at it, her confidence was growing and growing. And other players came to her. Navneet, can you explain me on the tactical side how we have to improve this, or what must I do in this situation? So inside, during the Olympics in the match, she says, coach, we need to play another way of pressing. We had 3 or 4 systems. I say, okay, Navneet, tell the team. So I gave her completely responsibility because I knew she was good at that. So it works on many ways. And that's why it's important for me, get to know your people. Yeah. But also under stress, how do they act? During the Olympic qualifier in Bhubaneswar, we won the first match with 5-1. And the second match, we were 4-0 down in 30 minutes. And a lot of girls says, no, I don't want to take responsibility. I'm just watching someone else. But you need to know as a coach, as a leader, who's taking responsibility on the difficult moments. And that's why that really helped us, but also by identifying each other's strengths. So the team knew about Navneet, but the team also knew about Rani. She wants to be an inspiration for the other ones. Vandana, she liked to work for the team. Now, on these things, so we brought that together, and then we were talking more about strengths than about weaknesses. And that also builds up the confidence from the individual, but also from the team. And that's more or less how I have done this. And I'm sorry, I'm saying I, but we as a staff have done this.
It's fascinating. How did you go about what's interesting in that answer you just gave was the way that the players knew about each other's almost their psychological makeup or definitely their behavioral profile. How did you go about the process of sharing that information across the team so that they could understand each other on a more holistic or deeper level?
Yeah, of course, everybody gets his own information and then it's about them to what do they want to share. And in my individual meetings with the players, I could talk freely about these things, of course, and said, okay, listen, these are your strengths. Do you recognize them? Yes, I do recognize them. Say, okay, how can we use them in the team? And what I did slowly is, okay, hey girls, you've seen enough need is understanding the structure. What do you think about we let her help? We let her help you. Or you can go to her with help. So on that way, on a natural way, it starts that they know more from each other instead of that I say, okay, here is the report of Navneet.
Was there a time where you pushed someone perhaps too far and you had to pause and almost redefine that line of how much you could challenge them?
Yeah, like it's too easy for me to say no, because what I said, you always watch first yourself, and maybe I did, but the difficult thing is with the girls in India, they don't give the feedback, listen coach, you went now too far. Yeah, and what way can I also see it is, for instance, that someone was underperforming, and also that happened, and not every player, I didn't reach every player's potential. So it's a very thin line with coaching. How far can you go? Yeah, and I strongly believe the body and the mind can do more than you think, but they have to experience this. And that's also what they have done. And then you can see they can do much more. And that's what I wanted to show them, experience them.
So you're now back in the Netherlands. You've got the corporate business. And, of course, recently you were coaching the men's team in Tilburg. India is an amazing place to visit. I've been fortunate enough to go there a couple of times. I think it changes you. And you've had this amazing experience of immersing yourself in the country, taking them to the Olympics. And I'm wondering, how has it changed you as a leader now, today?
Yeah, I have become more calm as a coach of the situation. I've been there for the last 4.5 years. So many struggles, and you do realize even more what you have. So if players communicate with each other, I do realize that's a benefit. So when I was coaching Tilburg last year, and they went from the locker room to the pitch, they were telling each other, okay, the weather is, it's nice weather. I had some studies yesterday, and these small things really help me. Okay, I know I have more information about the players, and I know how they feel. When the girls always walk to the pitch, I didn't know anything what they were saying to each other. Yeah, because I still don't speak Hindi. And someone told me once, shoot, you need to learn Hindi, but there are 200 different languages in India. So where to start? And of course, I knew some hockey words. But you realize more now what you have instead of what you don't have. And that's especially when you have been as a European in a country like India. And the other thing, what I also, and it's also becoming older as a coach. Like the good thing about coaching, I think, if you review yourself a lot, you become better the older you get. Yeah, because if I watch myself back as a young coach, I think, oh, shoot, so many mistakes. You have to learn so much things. And I see now young coaches make the same mistakes. But it's normal. It's a process. And I now see, besides the patience, I'm also building more in the relations with the players. In the past, I was talking always about tactics, technical things to solve problems. And now I'm more talking with players to resolve the problem.
Oh, fascinating. I think India has that impact on a lot of us when we go there. You need to be patient and you need to learn to go with the flow and let it take you where it takes you. Sure. Just to finish, I'd like to just play back a quote to you. You talked a little bit about it earlier about changing my creating a potential for young people and so forth. But I'd like to read this quote before I ask you the question. You say, "I'm proud to be part of that because that's what I always dreamed of. I never dreamed about winning medals. I never dreamed about what people say about awards and about money. I only dreamed about one thing, and that is doing something that nobody has done before and creating a legacy that you will be always remembered for." It's a pretty big dream. You got pretty close with that Indian team, but I'm wondering, I know that you've got many years left in coaching and particularly in leadership. But what do you think your legacy is so far?
Yeah, what I hope they will say, he gave everything to let the girls shine, and that we inspire people to reach their potential. And that is what I hope.
Well, can I challenge you on that?
Yeah, of course you can.
Having experienced the very hierarchical nature of India, I think your approach to empowerment is actually quite game-changing. And I think it's going to create another generation of coaches that are going to take a very different approach to not only sport, but also to leadership.
Thank you very much. I was talking about the movie, and the movie is the Peaceful Warrior. Do you know it?
I do.
It was for us the changing moment at the Olympics. And from there on, we were in the moment. But what I did, I cut pieces from the movie. We didn't watch the whole movie, small parts. And yeah, you have to discover yourself the own part, the small parts, but you will know as a coach what can make the difference.
Sherd, it's been great talking to you. I'm glad we could finally connect. It's a wonderful story in a really amazing, a fantastic country. And I wish you all the best with the startups and the new businesses. I'll put all the links to those in the show notes so that if people want to contact you and hear more, they know where to catch you.
Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you for your invitation, and nice chatting with you.
Hi, everyone. You have been listening to the great coach, Sherd Marinier. And I hope you found a couple of ideas that you can bring to your own dinner table, locker room, or boardroom table for discussion. Some of the other key highlights for me were the way he uses psychological profiling to help identify the strengths of his team, how he uses culture guides within the team to help build the behaviours that the team aspire to, and how when he was fired, he looked in the mirror first and challenged himself with what he can do differently next time. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And just before we go, if you have any feedback, then please let us know. Just like Puppy B, who said, "Love the simplicity of the messages these great leaders have to share." Thanks, Puppy. The interaction with the people around the world who listen gives us great energy. And so if you have any feedback or comments, please let us know. And if they're positive ones, then please spread the word amongst your friends and family too. All the details on how to connect with us are in the show notes or on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.